Hello, everybody, and welcome back, maybe, or welcome here for the first time. We are, as usual, really glad to be here. And this week, Justin, we are coming out of a week where we've done the second gathering of Turning Towards Life Live. And those ones who have come and decided to do it with us, I'm really thinking of them very strongly and how wonderful this thing is and how extraordinary it is for us to be in actual backwards and forwards conversation with the people who listen to us regularly. And I want to say that there's another season coming up, and if you wanted to join us next time we open the doors again to start, I think in February, Justin, is that right?
February or March.
And so that just feels like an ongoing invitation that we can always keep making, which is really wonderful. And also to say, I had dinner last night with a couple of my very old school friends, one of whom listens very regularly and one of whom is interested in listening. And the sweetness of her telling me that she started listening to Turning Towards Life when her little daughter, who's now just turning 8, was in her tummy. And that she's had that whole long relationship with us is very sweet. So anyway, these little tiny comments that we get, Justin, every now and again, of feeling what this is in people's lives are so excellent. I love them. And it's a joy that people get a chance to meet with us in person. I mean, it's online, but we're together in conversation, and it's completely joyful to me to be doing it. So I'm thinking of that really strongly today. I'm really grateful, Justin, for this source that you're bringing about aliveness. It's a very big and alive reflection in itself in my life at the moment. I'm so glad to be in it with you, Justin, and thank you for being a person who gets these things sent your way so that they can be part of this conversation together.
Thank you, Lizzie. It's good to see you, and hello, everybody. I was also really inspired and touched by our experience last week, Lizzie, of the second month of Turning Towards Life Live, and having a group of, 16 of us in the end this time who gathered and really listened to one another and learnt together exactly in the style that you and I are doing here. It was very special. And of course, you and I are recording, as part of that, we're recording special episodes of Turning Towards Life that live in that, which is rather marvelous as well. I don't know if they'll ever find their way out into the public world or if they'll just belong in there. So it is exciting to be able to say you can already join the next season. It's available to sign up at turningtowards.life. And we've continued to be really supported by people who email us to say hello, and also by people who are supporting us by buying us cups of coffee to keep this ship on the road. And that's still going. And you can do all of that at turningtowards.life and sign up for the emails, which means if it's the first time you're hearing this, you can get an email with the source and links to the audio and the video and all of those kind of things. Rather a nice thing to get. And also in my mind this week, Lizzie, are the participants on our professional coaching course, because I'm still, this time last week, we were finishing off a big 5-day part of that program, and I still have them, and how this conversation that we're in feeds into what everyone is learning about the very tender and powerful work of working with other humans. And I want to keep on saying that to you and to me and to everyone, that this conversation, in a way, the spirit of it is very closely connected to what it takes to be a person who can really attend with wisdom and compassion and depth to the life of another person. It's not only a conversation for its own sake, which it is. It's sort of got that question in mind. So it seemed good to say that this morning. And in February of 2026, so coming up in a few months, there's an opportunity to join us online to have a couple of days learning about that kind of coaching. And you can always find out about that at wearethirdspace.org. And here, this source, so we always have a source, as you know, Lizzie, and we'll read the source and then we'll see what conversation unfolds from it. And I think I want to say before I read that the spirit of this is going to be about aliveness, and the spirit of this of the way we do this conversation is really always about attending to aliveness. We're never just talking about something, but we are bringing this source right into the middle of us and letting the source live, and then feeling into and attending to the feeling of aliveness and responsiveness in each of us, which is where what we have to say comes from. So it's not a sort of academic topic or something. It's not even a topic about only about how to live our lives out there. It's right here. So it's by Oliver Berkman. A couple of weeks ago, when we were doing statistics, we counted up who are the people who we've had the most sources from, you know, who keeps on popping up now and again. Oliver is someone, in a way, we could read every week. We won't, because we want a very wide range of sources, but we have featured his writing, your writing, Oliver, if you ever get to listen to this. Thank you. A few times, and it's very good to be able to bring this back. And Oliver, you can check out Oliver Berkman on the web, and you can, he's got some wonderful books, but you can also sign up to his, he sent out regular writing as part of a newsletter, not all the time, now and again, and it's always excellent. And whenever we draw on someone's work, I want to always direct people to the person whose work it is. So find, you will post the link in the show notes and in the email, and then you can find your way to him and read all of his work, and maybe have him arrive in your inbox. And this is called Navigating by Aliveness. The concept that sits right at the heart of a sane and meaningful life, I'm increasingly convinced, is something like aliveness. It goes by other names too, none of which quite nail it. But it's the one thing that, so long as you navigate by it, you'll never go too far wrong. Sometimes it feels like a subtle electrical charge behind what's happening, or a mildly heightened sense of clarity, or sometimes like nothing I can put into words at all. I freely concede it's a hopelessly unscientific idea, but I'm pretty sure it's what Joseph Campbell meant when he said that most of us aren't really seeking the meaning of life, but rather an experience of being alive, so that we actually feel the rapture. Although personally, I don't think it's always rapturous per se, of being alive. In literal terms, of course, aliveness can't be the right word, because technically everyone's alive all the time, whereas aliveness comes and goes. Still, I know when I feel it. And I definitely know it when my misguided efforts to exert too much control over reality cause it to drain away. And so an excellent question to ask yourself when you're facing a tough decision, say, or wondering if you're on the right track is, does this feel like it's taking me in the direction of greater aliveness? Crucially, aliveness isn't the same as happiness. As the Zen teacher Christian Dillo explains in his engrossing book, The Path of Aliveness, you can absolutely feel alive in the midst of intense sadness. Aliveness, he writes, isn't about feeling better, it's about feeling better. When I feel aliveness in my work, it's not because every task is an unadulterated pleasure. And when I feel it in my close relationships, it's not because I've transcended the capacity to get annoyed by other people, because believe me, I haven't. But to whatever extent I do manage what Dillo refers to as fully inhabiting my experience, life is good in a deep sense and more vibrant, and I feel more connected to others, and overall happiness tends to predominate. I think it might be the key to understanding how to think and feel about AI, how to respond to it, how to integrate it into our lives or not, and how to ensure as technology marches on that we don't lose sight of what really matters for a meaningfully productive life. Most obviously, aliveness is what generally feels absent from the written and visual outputs of ChatGPT, even when they're of otherwise high quality. Makes you wonder if Wendell Berry had it right when he wrote, "It is easy for me to imagine that the next great division of the world will be between people who wish to live as creatures and people who wish to live as machines. A working life spent in a crouch of fear, fixated on losing as little ground to AI as possible, ceaselessly hypervigilant in an effort to stave off catastrophe, seems to me entirely antithetical to the possibility of true aliveness. Why on earth would anyone want to spend their finite days in that way?" The obvious answer, of course, is that you might have no choice, that given what's coming, anyone who wants to keep food on the table must give up their dreams of aliveness and buckle down to placating the machines instead. I have two things to say about that. The first of which is that I don't believe it, that aliveness is so central to meaningful human experience, that there'll always be a market for those who can cultivate it, embed it in what they create, foster it in institutions and organizations and bring people together to experience it. But the second is, even if I'm hopelessly wrong about that and the direst predictions about AI disruption come true, then navigating through life by aliveness is still the right choice, because that's what makes life worth living. So you might not get to avoid a major upheavals or painful sacrifices thanks to technological and economic shifts, but you'll endure them if you must, not out of blind panic, but in the context of navigating towards more aliveness for yourself and those you care about. I think it's good to stay fully, even slightly foolishly, committed to the idea that humans doing human things with other humans is and will remain at the vital heart of human existence. Because otherwise, what on earth's the point?
Thank you, Justin. The concept that sits right at the heart of a sane and meaningful life, I'm increasingly convinced, is something like aliveness. It goes by other names too, none of which quite nail it, but it's the one thing that, so long as you navigate by it, you'll never go too far wrong. Sometimes it feels like a subtle electrical charge behind what's happening, or a mildly heightened sense of clarity, or something like nothing I can put words into words at all. I freely concede it's a hopelessly unscientific idea. But I'm pretty sure it's what Joseph Campbell meant when he said that most of us aren't really seeking the meaning of life, but rather an experience of being alive so that we actually feel the rapture. Although personally, I don't think it's always rapturous per se, of being alive. In literal terms, of course, aliveness can't be the right word here, because technically everyone's alive all the time, whereas aliveness comes and goes. Still, I know it when I feel it. And I definitely know when my misguided efforts to exert too much control over reality cause it to drain away. And so an excellent question to ask yourself when you're facing a tough decision, say, or wondering if you're on the right track, is, does this feel like it's taking me in the direction of greater aliveness? Crucially, aliveness isn't the same as happiness. As the Zen teacher Christian Dillo explains in his engrossing book, you can absolutely feel aliveness in the midst of intense sadness. Aliveness, he writes, isn't about feeling better, it's about feeling better. When I feel aliveness in my work, it's not because every task is an unadulterated pleasure. And when I feel it in my close relationships, it's not because I've transcended the capacity to get annoyed by other people, but because, believe me, I haven't. But to whatever extent I do manage what Dillo refers to as fully inhabiting my experience, life is good in a deep sense and more vibrant, and I feel more connected to others. And overall, happiness tends to predominate. And Justin, I think I'm going to stop there because it's very long.
Probably is one of the longer sources we've ever brought, Lizzie. And I have taken some liberties with Oliver's work and edited it a bit. But it all felt like it really belonged. It was important to say, particularly at this moment in history. You know, I suppose the simple thing to say is I brought this because I agree with it in so many ways. And if I start at the end, one of the things that really strikes me, I think it's an incredibly important distinction to see that what Oliver is saying in the end, although he never says it this way, is the whole of our lives is experiencing. Like, it's really hard to see this until we pay attention to it, that all we have in our lives is experience. I mean, I don't mean to say we don't have other people and we don't have, but we cannot be in our lives without experiencing our lives. And so the nature of our experience really matters. And we can shallow our experience or deepen our experience. And we can pay attention to our experience and the experience of other people, so that they have the kind of experience that a life deserves. I think that a conscious, sentient life deserves. And the big mistake we might make with AI and all of those technologies is to say that's not the important thing. That's irrelevant. And I'm very, very glad that Oliver is saying in the end, if you look deeply enough, it's actually the most relevant thing. Like, what would a life be if what we did was, because of the way machines work, we tuned out of our lives for a whole life. You could live 70, 80, 90 years and never feel your life. Easy. And maybe getting easier with the kind of technology that we're making. And I really agree with Oliver. What's the point of that? What's the point of making ourselves into machines? But I think more deeply, what happened for me as you were reading, Lizzie, is Oliver says this really interesting thing. He says aliveness can't be the right word because technically we're all alive as long as we're alive. So it's something else. And I think I know this, and I think many of us know this if we'll pay some attention. There is a way of being in our lives, which I would call, some people might call presence, and I would call contactfulness, where we are allowing ourselves to be intimate with this being of being a person, rather than far away from it, because we can be so far away from what's happening. And then it has nothing to do with happiness or sadness. I mean, it's got everything to do with it, but it's not about chasing something. It's actually about finding that the something that we thought we were chasing was always right here, and it's really, really close. So this something that aliveness, something that Oliver's calling aliveness, I'm gonna call intimacy with, closeness with this experience of being a person in all of its joy and all of its grief. And that when we're close to the experience of being a person, we're not just close with ourselves, we're actually close with existence as a whole. And that's the intimacy. And that's when we know ourselves alive, because we're not other than existence as a whole. We're an expression of the whole universe is expressing itself right here. That's what I am and what you are. So what I'm trying to get into is that I think that what Oliver says stands for itself really clearly. And I can feel that it's a doorway into something that isn't quite fully expressed here, but it's really important to consider, which is something like, what is it that we're filled with when we attend to aliveness in the way that Oliver says? That's not quite a feeling, and it's not just the material fact of being alive, and it's really tangible, and it's not part of most of our conversation most of the time, I think.
I'm feeling very enlivened in just feeling and thinking about what you're saying. And I think that's part of it for me, is my aliveness seems to be, I don't know what the word is, more vibrant when I am this contactfulness that you're talking about, which means when I listen and when I'm present to contactful, as you say, open, curious, wondering, seeking to understand, wide-eyed, wondering, all of these kind of distinctions are coming to me about what I feel like when I'm really feeling alive. And what I'm really loving about this word aliveness, Justin, is it feels extremely inclusive of this human experience, as you're saying. Like it helps me to remove all of the demands that feel quite historical to me, like the demands of people around me when I was growing up to be okay or to be happy or to be fine with things or to get over myself really quickly because I should be fine in this transition of moving from one place to another or whatever. It suddenly removes all those demands that I have embedded in me. And I think, well, it's okay if I have relationships that are tumultuous, or I have times when I feel awful, or I have times when, because it's all a part of it. Like I can welcome it all. And I think the broader kind of scope, if you like, of feeling alive, it takes care of so much just by being okay with things. Like I think part of the struggle is like, if I'm sad, there's another layer that I shouldn't be sad. Whereas if I'm in service of aliveness, I don't have to have another layer. I can say, well, this is part of the picture of what it means to be human, is that this is part of it. And then I can also then become less demanding of others as to how they need to be, because I'm looking for aliveness in them too. As in, oh, is this part of aliveness right now for you? Probably the answer is yes, because it includes everything. And I like that link that Oliver makes with just being alive is like having a beating heart and breathing, as distinct from the feeling of aliveness. Because in one way they're different things, and in some way they're right next to one another. Like aliveness is everything. It encompasses everything. And I also really enjoy this feeling of questioning what I'm comfortable with and what I'm not comfortable with in the same way. So maybe I am uncomfortable with sadness, but maybe uncomfortableness is also very linked to aliveness. You know, we've spoken loads, Justin, about like the habitual nature of life and the stuff we get attached to and the way of being that we get ingrained in, and then we can't step out of it. And it, like you've talked about your dancing and how sometimes it's felt like excruciating to move your body and be seen as having a body. And then when you do it, you're like, oh, I'm feeling like a different possibility emerges. Like I feel like a different path could be available to me now because I'm doing something that I didn't do before. And for me, that's also inherent in aliveness, is noticing where our kind of comfort becomes something that numbs us or keeps us the same when there's something in us longing to be freer or more expressive or artistic or creative or something. And actually, I loved it when in the second part you said, Oliver said, you know, do we want to be creatures or machines? And I just hadn't really recognized the relationship between creature and creative. And I think it's like one of those moments of going, oh my gosh, yes, I'm a creature. I'm of creation. I am a creator. Like I'm all the things. And what does that even mean? So I'm feeling the kind of the wideness of this aliveness conversation and how it's zooming me out, if you like, to see things as includable rather than chop offable. And well, yes, I'm going to chop off sadness, or I'm going to chop off melancholy, or I'm going to chop off frustration, or I'm going to chop off anger or something, and be really curious about everything in the context of aliveness.
Very taken by your noticing this language of creature, creation, that it resonates very strongly with this sense that I'm trying to see if I can find words for, that I think you're doing a lovely thing with, is our non-separateness, that we are inescapably not separate from the universe itself. Like we're made of the same stuff. We're filled with the same atoms and molecules. I mean, if you look at it that way, we're just not separate from all of that stuff. So we're not separate, but also we're not separate from life. And life itself is not just a bundle of atoms. I mean, life is filled with intention and longing and relationship and contact and intimacy and conflict and all of that. We're not separate from that either. And to notice that we are creatures in both senses, I think creatures sounds like it's a diminutive word, actually, Lizzie, but when you say it, and when Wendell Berry writes it, I think that's not a diminutive word. We are both created. We are of this vast creation that is here. You know, whatever way you want to account for it, it's here, and it's vast and rich and deep and mysterious. And we are also ones who create in the midst of it. We have huge choice about how we create. And that's surely, I really appreciate Oliver's efforts to try and give lots of different examples of language to try and talk about what this is, this aliveness. Aliveness. So that's surely part of it. And it seems to me that maybe the unique thing that we humans do, I don't know if there are any other creatures that can do this, but we definitely can, is because of the nature of our thinking, we can separate ourselves off from the felt sense that we are of creation. We're able to do this kind of abstract thinking where we can think about and we can have abstract concepts, which is very powerful and has allowed us to make, well, things including like ChatGPT, like our way of conceptualizing and abstracting has allowed us to make science and technology and language and all kinds of things. But we make the mistake then of thinking that that's what we are and forgetting that all of that came from our intimacy, our non-separateness of being creatures in the midst of a vast creation. So in that way, I think what Oliver's doing is he's keep on saying, notice how easy it is to forget. Notice how easy it is to withdraw from the stream of life that we are as if we were separate from it, and notice the cost of that. And then I think when we withdraw in that way, which lots of us have been taught to do, you know, like you were saying, Lizzie, we learn not to feel joy or not to feel fear or not to speak up or something. Once we've got used to sort of contracting away from life, we feel its absence and then we pursue it in lots of other ways. So we try to fill, you know, I need to fill myself up with happiness now, or I need to fill myself up with excitement, or I need to avoid filling myself up with grief because I don't have enough anything else here in order to sustain myself. So we get desperate in trying to reach for it. And Oliver says this wonderful thing. He says, I know it when I feel it. And the next sentence he says, and I definitely know it when my misguided efforts to exert too much control over reality cause it to drain away. So our efforts to control it are the very thing which take us away from it, which is the thing I'm talking about. So we feel an absence and we imagine that what we've got to try and do is fill it with the thing that's missing. And Oliver keeps on saying, essentially, I hope, Oliver, if you ever listen to this, this will feel coherent with what you've written, that there's an invitation here in a way to be able to notice when we've pulled away and are trying to control, to know that feeling, and then to know the feeling of letting go of the control so we can dive in.
I am really taken, Justin, as well by this line. I definitely know when my misguided efforts to exert too much control over reality cause it to drain away, that Oliver says. And I think the relationship between aliveness and control, and aliveness and flexibility and responsiveness, feels like such a huge part of the conversation of how to live well. You know, I know myself in the grips of anxiousness and controllingness and wanting things to go a certain way, and how constraining it is in my being. That doesn't feel alive, to feel like a crustacean, you know, to feel hemmed in by my own hard lines and my own hard shell, where I can't respond to anything because I'm so kind of in my own, it's still my experiencing, but it doesn't feel aligned with this notion of aliveness that we're talking about. It feels held back. It feels hyper-focused on me and disconnected from everyone around me, and that I can't go with the flow. I can't meet invitations. I can't say yes. I can't kind of roll with what happens in my life because I'm so preoccupied with having things be a certain way. And that feels punishing. That feels like some kind of inner imprisonment. And so whatever I can do to meet life, and I don't know where, I mean, it's like there's different places to begin. I think contactfulness is an amazing place to begin. Maybe like impressionability or openness or curiosity or wondering or something. I think we only have to find like one little something to cultivate to lead us in to this thing about aliveness. And then, of course, we get to see all the things that get in the way of being alive, because of all of our control will come up. And then, but what an amazing way of kind of observing ourselves to think, well, I'm going to pull on the thread of curiosity. What if I just went round today and was really curious about every single person that I met, or every single flower that I saw, or how concrete got made, or how on earth a pavement gets, you can tell where I live by the example I'm giving, or how a tree survives coming out the midst of a pavement, or how a train works. My children are obsessed with trains at the moment, and this morning very early we had a train thing on. I was thinking, I don't even know how a train actually works, you know. And it leads me into like even just the curiosity thing, leads me into a whole different realm than just, yeah, it's a train. Yeah, it's pavement. There's something about these qualities that just taking one of them and feeling into the kind of aliveness that it brings. And I feel like that in itself, Justin, is a really cool thing that we might do one day, is feel into all the different qualities and where they take us and the path to freedom in opposition to, or as a counter move to feeling controlling and afraid. What are the qualities that we could cultivate that lead us into flexibility and openness and responsiveness and contactfulness? And maybe some of us find curiosity an easier thread, a more pleasurable thread, a more natural thread than responsiveness or intimacy, or but there would be many that we could pull on to see what kind of path opened up where things unlike itself would come arise to be seen, but that we could begin the work of going, well, what is it that has me feel more alive in the easiest way that I could find, that's most natural and like my own propensity anyway, like a move of kindness in this conversation to go, well, what do I already do? What do I already feel like I can do that would help me feel more alive today?
I think that's such a wonderful, straightforward, accessible way of getting into this, isn't it, Lizzie, that you're bringing distinctions about what aliveness might be in some places that we can begin to feel its presence. And for some of us, it might be curiosity, like you say, and for some of us, it might be, like I keep on talking about, intimacy. It might be letting myself feel, you know, walking down the street and putting my hand on the wall that I'm walking past and letting myself feel the contact between me and the wall, or letting myself feel the contact between my feet and the floor. And I think that there's this sort of fashionable language about presence, which I think obscures a lot of this distinction. Intimacy there is, you know, is contact. And for some people, curiosity might be the way that we go away from things. We go, well, I won't feel anything because I'm very curious about this, you know. And so, but the way I was just going to take that thought, I think this something that you suggested is such a wonderful beginning. And then a little bit more of a further on kind of pointer. For those of us who feel like the example I was thinking about was, I might be a person who cares really deeply about others. Because I care about others so much, I effort all the time to try and make sure that everyone's okay all the time and everything's okay. So care might be a way that I get taken away. Now, when I spot that, there's a real opportunity here as well, because I can go, what would it be like if I let myself be filled with care that just already is? In other words, not care that required me to do something, but to feel how much I love everything, you know, instead of caring for you by controlling myself and controlling you, I go, I'm just going to let myself be filled by my care for you like it's already here, and see what it's like to be filled with that before anything else happens. So that might be a way into a very particular kind of way of working with this aliveness, is to see the thing that grips us most and see what it's like to. And I think in order to do that, it takes something quite bodily, like breathing in and letting my heart swell with care and letting myself feel the warmth of care and then coming into the world that way. So there's a big old conversation for us to have about that at some point, if we can find a source that will bring more closely into this topic that we're in about how we get in contact with the qualities of aliveness that you started to so attentively point us into.
I love that, Justin, that you're bringing us there and seeing that there's, with every kind of, I don't know, I want to say compulsive action that we take that comes from somewhere and which kind of makes something or does something, there's always a question to be asked as to, well, is the doing, is the making that I feel like I have to do, is it really necessary? And I know, like, my care comes out like that. It's like I have this big surge of love for somebody and then I want to do something for them. I want to take them something. And actually this invitation to go, okay, well, what if I just be filled with how much I love this person and see if I can breathe myself into a place where I'm fully receiving them in my heart? And is it really necessary to do the thing? Is it necessary for them to feel like I've done something for them or whatever? And the cool thing is that the young ones around me are really teaching me about that stuff, because they can tell when it's coming from a needy place or I mean, there's nothing wrong with my neediness, but like, there is a way that I can be overwhelming or I can be too much. And the little ones in my life really show me where it's a distinction between a loving act versus my need to be loving. And actually, I don't need to do anything to be loving. I can be me. So I would love to try and delve more into this with you, Justin, and maybe we can find a source, because it feels really important to make this distinction between receiving and an action that stops us from receiving. I'm really into that wondering. So I think it's probably time for us to end, Justin. I know it's not my job to end us. It's your job to end us in our equation of things. But I want to appreciate that this is such an extraordinary, wide-ranging conversation. And thank you to Oliver for sending us here. And thank you, Justin, for being wonderful and open and contactful in the way that you are and very alive in your being.
Izzy, thank you. And thank you for stopping us at the right time. We could go on for a very long time. Thank you, everyone, for being with us. Thank you, Oliver. Thank you, everyone, for being with us. If you're still here listening to the end, we would love to hear from you. So hello@turningtowards.life is a great way to reach us. And all being well, we will be back again next week. Bye.
Bye, everyone.